Well, first of all, I want to thank all of you for being on the call today. For those listening now, those participating later, I want to thank you for your support of the NVC Academy, which in my opinion has made a huge contribution to the learning of nonviolent communication around the world. And I'm very grateful that Mary invited me to participate. And as I said earlier today, very happy to see you, Robin. And I'm really excited about this topic of empathy magic, mostly because I'm excited about empathy. So anything that can help us to have more ease in practicing it, I'm all about it. So I'm excited to be sharing this topic with you today. My plan is to spend about the first quarter to maybe at most first third of the call sharing some concepts. Those of you who know me as a trainer know I'm really big on firsthand learning. So I do some concepts I want to share, and then I'm hoping we're going to definitely have some time to start practicing together. Even though we have only about 40 minutes, I hope to do that. So I don't know if this resonates with anybody else, but when I was new to learning nonviolent communication, when I first had that experience of someone listening to me empathically, it really did seem like magic to me. It really left me in awe. I see Robin nodding her head and some other people too. I don't know if this also matches your experience, but the magic occurred for me on several levels. First of all, I was so amazed. How could this other person know this about me? You know, in my mind, I'd barely had told them nothing and they knew all these things about me. And these things were insightful and specific and profound. So that really seemed like magic. And also, empathy was magical to me because it was so transformative. I'm hoping and trusting that many or all of you on the call have had this experience. The shift is palatable. It's physical. We go, you know, I often do an exercise in workshops where I ask people to think of a challenging situation. You can see everyone's body starting to tense and tighten. They start to frown. Their shoulders go up. They kind of stop breathing, or well, not completely, of course. It's more shallow breathing. And then when we connect with their needs, you see people starting to smile again. Their shoulders drop. They breathe more easily. This is powerful. This is powerful stuff. What is it about empathy that can create that kind of shift in us as a species? And as I often ask people at these workshops, when do you think you're going to have the more effective conversation? When you're like this, or when you're coming more from this kind of energy? So this is the magic of empathy, the magic of nonviolent communication. There's one third area of magic, which I love about NVC and empathy, is it opens up creative solutions. I consider it one of the greatest gifts for me being a nonviolent communication trainer, is that I get to see this miracle happen over and over and over again. The resources that we're capable of once we have been heard. The internal resources we can access, the creativity of solutions. We're so focused, in my opinion, in our culture. Well, I'll speak for Western culture anyway. I think it's become the dominant culture worldwide of fixing things, of finding a solution. What I love about empathy, the magic of empathy, is simply by listening, by being present, new creative strategies emerge, solutions that nobody saw before, that didn't exist before. This is all part of empathy magic, in my view. And by the way, a little background, Robin mentioned one of my books earlier, Urban Empathy, True Life Adventures of Compassion on the Streets of New York. If you know that book, it's in a cartoon format, and the friend who illustrated it usually illustrates Superman and Batman comics. What motivated that book was, for me, you know, we have this idea about supermen, super people that have beyond human powers. For me, as someone, by the way, who was also a huge Star Wars fan growing up, as I often say, learning nonviolent communication was the closest I could get to being a Jedi. It's the closest I can get to being a superhero in terms of transforming situations, finding new solutions. It gives me hope that we can really create a different kind of dynamic for us as a species and the whole world. So that is really super, superman, superpower stuff. And, you know, again, for me, practicing NVC, if you are a Star Wars fan, you know, that moment when Obi-Wan Kenobi is going into the village and the stormtroopers in there, and they said, these aren't the droids you're looking for. You know, it's that kind of magic level that I hope people resonate with that. Maybe not as much of a Star Wars fan to me, but this idea that we can have that kind of impact through connecting with people. And I also want to say one other idea about this before we move into the more practical aspects today. The other thing that's magic for me about this is it's practical, it's tangible. When I was growing up going to Sunday school, people often talked about the golden rule, turn the other cheek, etc. And I say, how do you do that? So I love that this empathy magic is very practical. We have very practical skills in nonviolent communication for practicing this empathy. So when I learned NVC, I learned by osmosis, meaning no one had for me the kind of system that I'm going to be sharing with you today. I simply listened and I practiced, and through experimentation, I learned how to make empathy guesses. And I just want to say that those of us who teach NVC, I think for all of us, it's very important and precious, the consciousness of nonviolent communication, what I call in a business setting, the mindset, our intention. If you're focused too much on the form, overly focused on the form, we can forget that consciousness. So the consciousness, the intention, in my view, is really very, very important. However, I also think the form supports the consciousness. It's sort of like a yin-yang relationship, or if you're familiar with this archetype of the Ouroboros, a snake with the tail in its mouth, it's like a full circle, meaning the form supports the consciousness, and of course, without the consciousness, the form is meaningless. So I hope all this makes sense. I just want to pause briefly to see if there are any questions. In my view, I shared a lot already around empathy magic and about the consciousness of NVC and the form of NVC. If you have a question or comment, I just want to hold 1 or 2 minutes and you can raise your hand or even put your question or comment in the chat. I just want to see if everyone's with me roughly right now before I move on to the practice. Hi.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to ask about the definition by what your definition of empathy, if you could share it.
Sure.
I was struggling with that.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that question. I originally had it in my notes and given we had 40 minutes, but I'm happy to speak to that. I am talking about a very specific practice of empathy here and how we practice it in nonviolent communication. And again, it's a very tangible skill, which is what I love about it, which is listening for someone's feelings and listening for their needs. For me, empathy is putting ourselves in another person's shoes for a moment, seeing the world from their perspective, different than sympathy. And we have a very specific way of doing that in NVC through deeply listening and listening for feelings and needs. And we're going to explore that aspect in a moment through needs today. But I hope that was helpful in terms of how I see what empathy is. And I hope you have some familiarity with NVC to have some context for what I'm talking about there.
All right. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Alon. And then I'm going to go to Beth and then Elke. Hi, Beth.
Hello, Mary. Dean, I just am really appreciating the circular relationship between form and intention or consciousness. I hadn't seen it in that way before. And I know as I've moved through NVC, there seems to be a lot of emphasis on the intention or the consciousness and people just kind of walking away from the form. Oh, that's what you just need in the beginning. And you know, you let go of that and the form can be constrictive and push people away. And so it's like, oh yes, there is a place for the form. There is value to the form. And I'm so glad that you pointed that out.
Thank you. Yeah, the way I look at the form, and some of you know, I also teach workshops on street NVC. I'm big on colloquial practice of NVC. Those four steps is my roadmap. So I may not be, I'm on a road, I'm heading somewhere, but in the back of my mind, if I'm in a conversation with someone, especially if it gets a bit sticky, if we're having some disconnection, in my mind, where am I in this four-step process? So even if I'm practicing colloquially, I am thinking about that form. And I also want to add that I come to teaching NBC from a very specific background, because I have a background in linguistics and second language acquisition. I have a certificate from Princeton in teaching English as a second language. I taught English as a second language for many years. So as you'll see today, I think as we get into the practice, that way of thinking has informed both how I teach, because in my view, it is a consciousness, and learning nonviolent communication has a lot in common with second language acquisition. It is a language. So there's a lot of research in what supports efficient and effective second language acquisition. And that informs how I teach NVC, because I believe it's both. It's a consciousness and a language. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you, Deanne. And Elke, go ahead.
Hi, Elke.
Hi, it's actually Elke, but
sorry. Elke.
Yeah. So you mentioned focusing on the intention and the conscious. Do you have suggestions for how to strengthen our focus on that?
Yes. I'm so glad you asked that. And it's already built into the practice of nonviolent communication. I really call this the pre-step, which is before I go into a conversation or situation with someone, I connect with my meta need. If you're having the conversation or the interaction, there's something that's driving that. So what need are you wanting to meet? Is it you're wanting information? Are you wanting connection? Are you wanting restoration? And that, by the way, is one of my favorite ways to practice colloquial NVC, is to hold the four steps in the back of your mind like a roadmap and go into the conversation holding like your favorite stone in your hand, the need that you're really wanting to meet in that conversation. And that guides you. So I don't know if there's any other hands up or not. Great, because I enjoyed this connection and I'm eager to move on to actually practicing. So, yes?
Dean, I apologize. A hand did come up at the last minute. Do you want to take it or do you want to move forward?
Okay, one more.
Okay. Pam. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. Dean, it's just a clarification. The meta need. So my understanding was that Marshall said that there's one intention, and that's to connect. But you were listing a couple other meta needs, which I think make a lot of sense.
They're all connection. A colleague of mine that I work with quite often, Martha Lastly, some of you may know her, once commented to me that all the needs come down to love. Uh-huh. So at the end, it's all about connection. Information is a strategy for connection.
Because you know what Marshall said. It's NVC is just the one intention is connection.
Yes. And if that can guide you in the conversation, great.
But there's a difference between the needs that you're trying to meet and the need and the meta need that you're talking about for the conversation, whether it be connection or just, can you list one or two more that you just said? Because I kind of missed them and I was like, yeah, those make sense.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it depends on the situation and the person. So I was just picking these off the top of my head, some of the needs that I might want to meet if I'm engaging with somebody. So yes, I agree with Marshall. It's ultimately about connection. And sometimes I go, if there's been, for example, some confusion, I'm going into the conversation specifically because I want information. So that helps guide me, because no matter what else happens in the conversation, I can let certain things go if I remember my intention was simply to get some information. Or if you're wanting restoration or healing, if you're wanting to be heard, or if you're wanting really to support the other person being heard. So it is... again, all about connection. And if I can focus on a particular objective through that need, it can help guide me and let go of some things that I'm going to let go of in this conversation because I'm focused on my main goal. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. And I'm also thinking to myself, okay, there's intention and there's needs, and you're melding them a little bit in this.
Yes. One way I like to use needs as a way to set my focus and intention.
Thank you.
And thank you. So I want to jump right in now to what we're going to focus on today, which is demystifying empathy guessing through exploring the root form of a word. So even if you don't have a background in linguistics or teaching a second language, I'm guessing you've probably noticed I know it's true for English and for French, and I believe all languages, that we recycle. There will be a root in a word. In English, it often comes from Latin. Even though English is a Germanic language, a lot of the vocabulary comes from Latin. But, you know, for example, the word impatient, that's an adjective. It's used to modify. It can be a predicate adjective. Now I'm already worried I'm using more grammar than maybe connecting for people. What I mean by predicate adjective is you can use it to describe a feeling like, yeah, I'm impatient. You can use it as an adjective to describe a person as a judgment. He's an impatient person. And then we also have the noun form in English, impatience. So the root holds the meaning of the word. And then the ending of the word in English tells us what part of speech it is, if it's an adjective, a predicate adjective, or a noun. And then the part that precedes the word, usually like im or un or non, that's a prefix, that is just used to create a negative. But the point is, if you look at the root of that word, it has the same meaning, regardless what part of speech it is, if it's negative or positive, the root meaning is the same. I hope I haven't lost people with grammar. I know not everyone loves grammar as much as I do. Grammar is my math, but I hope you can draw on your knowledge of English to recognize what I'm talking about. So as you may know, a core intrinsic value of nonviolent communication is to move towards the positive, to move towards what we want. What need do we want to meet rather than focusing on what's wrong, on a judgment or a should? So if you think about it, if you look at the core root of a word as a judgment form, often the need is the direct opposite. So let's go back to this word, for example, impatient. Impatient is the adjective, the predicate adjective form. As a noun, it's impatience. If we can look at the root of the positive word, it's patience. Now, this might sound really simple, and it never ceases to amaze me. I just want you to know how often if someone will say something to me like, yeah, he's so impatient. And I say, wow, it sounds like you're wanting some patience. The person goes, yes, how did you know? That's where it seems like magic. How do I know they want patience? Because they just told me their judgment of this other person, and they think that this person's impatient. So if they think this other person is impatient, that's what they don't like. What do they want? If we look at the core root of that word being patience, then I know that they want patience. Does this make sense to everybody? Anything confusing so far? If you're confused, would you raise your hand or let us know in the chat? Because I really want confidence that we're moving forward together in this practice. Now, by the way, we will explore this more in the course, what to do when there isn't a root word. Basically, though, whatever the judgment is, we're looking for the opposite of that and then looking for the need based on the opposite of the judgment. Because the judgment is negative, it's critical, and we're looking for the positive essence in there. But I like starting with this example because it's a low-hanging fruit, in my opinion, that if you hear that root word, you can just flip it and get the need from that root word. Actually, you know what would give me confidence that I'm making myself clear? Is there anyone on the call who's willing to volunteer to recap on a high level the basic principle that I just explained? Then I'd feel confident that I've gotten it across before we start to practice. Anyone willing to do that? I would appreciate the support and connection.
Dean, I'm seeing that Pam wrote in the chat, if the core root of a word is the judgment form, then its opposite might identify the need.
That's it. Thank you. And here's the other thing I want to point out. When people, especially when they're upset, when they have judgments, they usually give us more than one. So it might seem, again, very simple if someone says, yeah, he's impatient, to say, oh, so you're wanting patience. But usually you're getting way more information than that. Yeah, he's really pushy, he's impatient, he never listens to anybody. So they're giving you all these judgments. It's usually in a kind of a group of judgments, which helps you for context. So that translation of impatience is just one of your empathy guesses in there. So that also helps to make it more colloquial. But it gives you, if you're new to empathy guessing, in my view, at least gives you a place to start. The other reason I like this is, and this is again where form is fitting perfectly with the consciousness. At the end of the day, in my view, NVC is about deeply listening. Part of that deeply listening is simply listening for the words. What are people actually saying? So if I'm listening for these root words, it's kind of like my preparing to recap. It helps focus my listening on what they're actually saying. If the person is upset with me, if I'm getting a bit of a tsunami coming into my face, listening for the actual words, I also find very calming and focusing. I don't need to take any of this personally. I don't need to react. My whole job is to listen for the words and based on those words to be silently guessing what's going on for that person. Great. Any other hands or comments at this point before we move on to practicing?
Dean, I see a comment. Can you use this in connection with ahimsa?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think as many listeners probably know, the reason Marshall chose the name nonviolent communication for this practice is he was very inspired by Gandhian principles. And as you also may know, some people are uncomfortable with the name nonviolent communication now because they're concerned it can be a little confusing. I prefer to call NVC collaborative communication, which to me is really about collaboration. Regardless, Marshall called it nonviolent communication because that was the closest translation into English that he could find for ahimsa. So for me, the whole practice of listening for someone's deepest intention, listening for their heart with the goal of compassion, that is ahimsa in action. And again, for me, the form supports the consciousness. The consciousness supports the form. I want both. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm using the whole shebang, form and consciousness. Okay, anyone else, Robin? Well, I will continue.
Yep.
Okay, so let's do some practice together. We already looked at impatient gives us the need of patience. How about misunderstood? If someone says, you're misunderstanding me, I'm always misunderstood, what is that person longing for? You can put it in the chat or raise your hand, please. That was a request if you missed it. Have any responses, Robin? Looks
like we do. I'm seeing understanding and also a comment. Focusing just on the words someone is using can help us separate a little from the intensity
yes.
that might be coming at us and use the words as that key to hearing the needs underneath.
Exactly. And again, this is where the form helps you. You know, the form is there for a reason. If we are focused on listening on the words and translating, we can save ourselves from putting our energy elsewhere, like in reacting. Okay, great. So I agree with that translation. Unreliable. You are just so unreliable. I can't depend on you at all. What is that person longing for? I'll say it again. You are so unreliable. I just can't depend on you. I'm putting some intensity here to make it real. What is that person longing for?
I'm seeing answers of reliability, being dependable, trust.
Yep. Yep. Thank you. So I hope you're seeing the low-hanging fruit is reliable here. Unreliable, if you put it in the positive and then put it into a noun. By the way, you may notice, again, if you're into grammar, all of the needs are abstract nouns, okay? Which is very different from a strategy. So they are abstract inherently. That's what makes them universal. So it's really easy to go from unreliable to reliability. And I love how someone also added trust there. Once I have that one translation, and again, we'll be practicing this more in the course, then you can look at a larger family of words that are synonyms, and that will give you other needs to guess. So unreliable goes to reliability. Then maybe, yeah, you're wanting reliability, consistency, dependability, you're wanting some trust. Yes, how did you know? Because they said, I'm unreliable. Okay, let's do another one. Oh my God, she is so incompetent. She doesn't know anything about what she's doing. I don't even know how she got that job. She's useless, really incompetent. Translation? Go for the low-hanging fruit first, which is, well, I won't say it again. I want this to be real practice. She is so incompetent, clueless, doesn't know what she's doing. You have any translations, Robin?
I'm seeing competence, competency, need yeah. for competence.
Yep, exactly. Now, by the way, again, I hope this doesn't seem too simple to you, but that's what I want to do. I want to make it simple. I want to demystify it so that it's easier for everyone to practice. And I want to spare everyone this, you know, I still want empathy to be magical. I think it always will be. Even though I know how to do it, I have three different empathy buddies. When I get empathy, it still seems like magic to me. But I want it to be easier for us to practice. Okay, let's do another one. I think you're getting the idea. They're just incompetent. We did this one already. Ineffective. They're just really ineffective. They're slow. They don't know what they're doing. Kind of similar to competency, but they're just really ineffective. Another low-hanging fruit. We have any translations, Robin?
We have effectiveness, accuracy, effectivity, efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Now that we've done these in isolation, again, I just want to give you a larger example of how usually when you get judgments, there's more than one, especially if the person's upset. But again, you can use this, what I call the low-hanging fruit, the translation of the root of the word to help get you started and then listen for synonyms. So for example, longer statement, you're so impatient and you never give me a chance. I just never can participate. Okay, so you're really wanting some patience and inclusion. I just can't rely on you. I never know what to expect. You just leave me hanging. It's so thoughtless. Okay, so I'm hearing you really want some consistency, dependability. And you're wanting some awareness and care. Okay. So I just want to pause again and make sure or have as much confidence as I can that everyone is with me on this. Any questions or comments about what we've done so far with translating the root meaning of the word from the negative, from the judgment, into the need?
A quick reminder, if you're on the phone, you can use *9 to raise your hand, and on Zoom video, look at the bottom of the participants list for the raise hand option, and you can also type into the chat. I'm hearing from Kathy, the examples are really helping. I feel I got it now. Nancy says yes with an exclamation point.
Great. Yay. I'm so happy to hear that. Of course, I want this to be a contribution for people. And I like to believe my background in linguistics. I don't see anyone else doing this in the network. So I'm especially excited about taking this focus and approach. Okay. So
Pam has her hand up.
Hey, Pam.
So I wonder if you're going to go to this, but something that happens for me sometimes is if I were to, like the example that you just gave, are you needing some consistency? Actually, it's not the same. I was going to say, if I say to somebody, I just need more consistency, I need more consideration, they tend to translate that as, so you're saying I'm inconsistent and inconsiderate? And I wonder what you would do with that.
Yeah, so I'm just going to reply to this briefly or do my best to reply to it briefly. I think part of this, there's a few elements here. It has to do with tone of voice, okay? Because if you know anything about language, it's not just the words, it's the body language, it's the tone. It has to do with the other person's filter, okay? Because this is another thing from communication theory 101, that people have this idea that when you speak, you have an idea in your head, it comes out of your mouth and it gets deposited through the other person's brain like a wormhole through their ear and goes into the brain. It doesn't work that way, actually. What happens is we have some kind of thought, it gets expressed in some form through our mouth. Is it clear or fully reflective of what's going on for us? Who knows? Then it's almost like this voice bubble, and then it's perceived by the other person through their own filters. So, you know, if you think about like a Venn diagram, you might get, you know, this is two overlapping circles. If you're not on the video, I'm taking my two fingers to make an overlapping circle. You might be lucky if you get 10% from what's in your brain comes out of your mouth, goes through their ear into their brain. So the filters are there as well, okay? The other element is this is a moment where I would probably go back to more classical NVC. I'm a big fan of practicing colloquial NVC. In my opinion, the way you formulated that is more on the colloquial side. And you know, the classical form is there for a reason. So if I'm getting that kind of pushback, I will either empathize with what they're pushing back around, or I will step back more into the classical model. Okay. All right. Okay. So I want all of you to practice. I did say at the beginning, I'm a big fan of interactive learning, which is one element that's inspired by my background in teaching English as a second language. You need to practice a language, not just hear someone speak it. So what I'd like everyone to do is I'm hoping and trusting you have a pen and paper nearby or a tablet or some kind of device. I would like you to think of a judgment that you recently had. I'm going to ask you not to think too much about it. Just think about it and write it down verbatim. Like the examples you've been looking at, it may be a cluster of judgments. That's okay. Just write down two or three sentences. Think of a judgment that you've had or a judgment that you have heard. And just write that down and then see if any of the words have a root meaning to it. But just write down your judgments first. It may not. Often it does, but let's see if someone has one that's authentic for them that does have a root word in it.
And Dan, Mickey has a hand up.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, how you doing, Dan? This one doesn't have a root, but something that's really up for me is I accuse somebody of being materialistic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is, we're going to be practicing this more in the course because we just have 40 minutes roughly today, but just what would be the opposite of materialistic?
Caring, compassionate, socially conscious.
Yeah, maybe also in mind depth, because, you know, I work on synonyms often when I'm empathy guessing. So if someone is materialistic, what might be some other judgments I would have? That they're superficial, which yeah. I think is how you got to caring. Right. So, yeah. So, and the other thing I would suggest, Nikki, is to look at all the other judgments that surround it. Again, in my view, it's pretty rare that we just get a one isolated judgment. It's a conversation. Things are in context. Other things have been said, right?
Yep.
And that will help you with the empathy guess.
Okay.
You know, like for example, if they said, oh my God, you're so materialistic. I can't believe you just spent 50 grand on a car.
Right.
That's going to help me translate what they mean by materialistic there. Wow. It sounds like it's really shocking for you and wanting maybe a different level of awareness and discernment about how you use your resources.
Yeah.
So again, using linguistic principles, we're going to be looking at in the course how to use synonyms, how to use the context. Because by the way, language does not exist without context. It's a whole larger topic, but it's where language came from. It's how language evolved. And it's meaningless, literally meaningless without context. So when empathy guessing, we're using language, we want to listen for the context.
Listen to the context. Okay, that's a new concept for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see if there's someone who has a judgment that you noticed has a word with that kind of root in it with meaning. Does someone have an example you're willing to share so we can practice together? By the way, just to encourage people to volunteer, this is an opportunity for you to get some coaching and support. And to support everyone's learning.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have one. She was just so insensitive.
Okay, great. And were there other judgments that came with that? Because having just spoken about context?
It was during a conversation.
Okay.
With a number of people. And, you know, my judgment was that she... we were actually in the midst of giving empathy to one person, and she said some things that sort of made the conversation, my judgment was, made the conversation about herself as opposed to the person we were giving empathy to.
Okay. Well, let's first of all, because we're focused on this in this call, if she said, I think you said the judgment was that you're so insensitive. So yes. What's your translation? It's a low hanging fruit in my opinion. What is she needing? What is she wanting?
Yeah, well, she wanted, what I wanted was...
Let's do a translation first, if you're okay with that. So you're insensitive. What is she wanting when she says that?
That was actually what I was saying about her. That was my judgment about her.
Oh, excuse me. She's insensitive. Okay, so what are you wanting?
Yeah, sensitivity.
Yeah, and I can imagine going with this idea of there being context and a family of words with synonyms. Sensitivity, awareness, consideration.
Yes, yes.
Care, maybe yep. Mutuality.
Yep.
So I see you nodding, and my sense is these are landing with you. I hope you and everyone else on the call is getting how we got there, just starting from insensitive and hearing a little bit about the context.
Yeah, all that lands. Yes.
Okay. Was this helpful, this process?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great. Let's hear from another person. We have another volunteer, Robin.
Let's see. I thought I saw another hand earlier. I think it was Lynn. Lynn, there we go. Your mic's open.
Hi. I had one that I heard recently. You're a liar. I can't trust anything you say.
Okay. So
that was pretty easy for me, actually.
Okay, yeah. So what was your translation?
Trust. I mean, they use the word trust, so it's right there, the low-hanging fruit, as you say.
Yes.
But I also got a sense that, not only trust, but truth, consistency, safety, and maybe even something below that, more, connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Reliability. It's so interesting to me how certain needs connect with other needs. I find working with companies and organizations, a need that comes up a lot is shared reality. Now, at the end of the day, shared reality is about trust.
Mm-hmm.
If we're lacking confidence that when I see an apple that you're calling it an orange, that goes to a very quickly to a core need for trust. So I can see how all of those like in a family would come up here. I also appreciate your example because, again, we'll be delving into this deeper in the course next May. But a liar does not have an easily accessible, in my opinion, root meaning that would be the opposite. The way like impatient goes to patience and misunderstood goes to understandings. But I liked your process, which is what I was suggesting earlier on a broad level or high level is look at the opposite. So what's the opposite of a liar? Someone who tells the truth.
Yep.
Where there's honesty. So that leads me easily to my needs guess. So it sounds like you're really longing for some accuracy and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Trust. Because truth, now here's the thing. Once we get to truth, the same root of truth is trust. Truth, trust. They're very similar. Again, you don't need to look up the etymology. You don't need to be a linguist. As an English speaker, even if you're a second language English speaker, you will notice out of efficiency, we're recycling. We're using the same root of the word, truth, trust. So once you get to truth, it's easy to get to trust for the need.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Robin, I think we have time for one more example. So let's see, is it one more person?
One more person. Anyone else want to jump in here?
Share your translation or any questions or any further comments about what we've covered today?
Well, here's one from the chat maybe you can take, Dean. Let's see. We got a couple here. How about he is a shy person?
Yeah, okay. So let's see if someone else on the call wants to help with this. What is the opposite of shy?
Anybody want to jump in with the opposite of shy?
And by the way, I'm asking for the opposite because shy is another one of those words that in my mind doesn't have a root meaning that easily flips over into the need. So we're going to look at the opposites and look for synonyms. So what is the opposite of shy?
OK, Okay, so we're seeing a few things in the, oh, here's somebody who wants to talk. Let's open up Yolanda's mic.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, they need this openness, I think.
Yeah.
Openness and the spontaneity, perhaps.
Yeah. So the opposite of shy, I'm thinking of synonyms. The opposite of shy in my mind is outgoing, as you said, maybe open. Mm-hmm. Maybe trust could come up there too. So here's another example. Thank you, by the way, Yolanda, for that translation. This is another example where I would want to be listening to the context. Other things, and the context comes from two areas, other things the person is saying and knowing where the conversation came from. And by the way, this is why we start with an observation in nonviolent communication. The observation is the context. It gives us the stimulus. What did the person hear? What did they see? That context is important. I'm mentioning this because, again, that will help us fine tune the empathy guess based on other things the person has said and the context or the stimulus. But based on having that one line, he's shy, I'm really happy personally with the guesses that Yolanda and I came up with. But it could be more specific based on the context. Okay, anyone else? I know we're technically out of time. It's up to you, Robin. Do we have time to take one more comment?
Well, let's name a few of the things in the chat. So some of the answers there were safety, courage, transparency, and then it looks like somebody's, thank you, Kathy, for calling to my attention that Fabiola might have a question. Let me find my way down there and open your mic. Okay, go ahead, Fabiola. We've opened your mic.
Okay, thank you. I'll try in English. Okay, my question is, I would say a little very fast for the context, because in Brazil, I'm Italian-Brazilian, and in Brazil now is a very difficult situation with the new president that has been elected. I don't know if you... And it causes a crack in the society. And if I have to make a judgment about some people that voted in him or even himself, I will say some words like crazy, incredible.
Okay, I'm going to jump in because I know have only a bit of time. First of all, thank you for speaking English. I have deep appreciation of what's involved in learning a second language and the time investment. So I'm grateful that you've taken the time to learn English so we can communicate. So thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about this more in the course. And when you have words that don't have real content in them, like crazy, jerk, stupid, the more extreme the judgment, that actually tells you about the feelings rather than the needs. Does that make sense? It's actually an indication of the feeling. So again, we want to listen to the whole. In the course next May, I'm looking forward to doing some more complex empathy guessing once we've worked on these basic skills. But if someone says, yeah, they're just insane, they're crazy, they're out of their mind, my feeling is, wow, it sounds like you're really scared and disturbed. That would be my feeling guess based on those judgments. Then I would listen for other things they're saying for the needs. Yeah, they're insane. What were they doing? Didn't they realize who they were voting for? Wow, sounds like you're really disturbed and wanting some awareness, wanting some perspective on what their choices might lead to. But those pure judgment words are actually an expression, in my opinion, of the feeling and the intensity of the feeling. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to wrap there. I hope that was helpful. And my condolences. Not exactly the same, but we've been dealing with something similar in the United States. So I've been following what's been going on in Brazil. So I can appreciate the struggles that you're probably experiencing there now and wanting to connect with people. This has given me a lot of opportunity to practice nonviolent communication. As I've been talking about recently quite a bit, my brother voted for someone different than I did. My brother carries a gun. We ended up having some very interesting conversations. I really get to practice my skills talking with my brother about gun control, for example. So my heart is with you, everybody in Brazil. So, okay, so a little sad to end. I'm really enjoying myself, and I am so looking forward to next May, and I hope some of you will join me then so we can delve more into this demystifying empathy guessing while keeping the magic?